Of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Find your passion and follow it. That sounds like great advice, but it's easier said than done. This hour, we're going to talk about how people find their passion and ask if this advice is good advice. We want to hear your stories this hour. Did you follow your passion? Have you changed careers based on the need to be passionate about what you do? Do you feel like this advice leads people astray? We want to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. But first, Dave Gould is here. He is a man who has helped many students find direction in their lives and careers. He's the administrator of the Bell and Blank Center for Gifted Education and Talent Development at the University of Iowa. And this semester, he taught a new University of Iowa Honors Program course called The Green Room. Dave, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Charity. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we have talked in the past on this program about some of your other projects with a life design course that you still teach that gives students the opportunities to ask some of the big questions. So with the Green Room course, that was in a way an extension of that. But describe for us what the idea was behind that course.
Well, the idea behind the course was based on the notion that higher education is no longer asking the right questions anymore of young adults. And if that's even partially true, then the next question is, what are they? And I certainly don't propose to know the answer to that. But what we did is we brought a group of thought leaders from all over the country, CEOs of companies, magicians, storytellers, I mean, all kinds of folks from different walks of life, each one of them bringing the question, a question, the single question that they believe that college students should be struggling with and higher education should be helping to inform. And that became the connective tissue from one class to the next. We made the students curators of the evenings, and so they each would handle a night and help to unpack whatever that question was with some kind of engagement. We ate dinner together to build community, which was a really wonderful, unique idea. Often it was the students just bringing their dinner, and we collectively would eat in the classroom, but we took the class on the road and went to farms and homesteads and actually had potlucks and dinner around that. And then we opened the class up to the community. So the university and Iowa City community had an open door, and we would have anywhere from 15 to 20 local people that just would join in the conversation to get to know our students and share their perspectives. And so, yeah, it was really a wonderful – it's an 8-week course. It was a wonderful 8 weeks.
And what are you hoping that the students took away from that experience?
Well, I'm hoping that many of the questions that people brought were things that they were forced to examine in their lives. I'll tell you just kind of a quick anecdotal story. One of the students shared, these are bright kids. These are all honor students that were part of the Green Room. I teach all kinds of students, but in this case, they were honor students. And in many cases, when you're kind of identified as being real smart, there's two or three, paths that you should go. Go in pre-med, be computer science, but there's a couple of handful, engineering, all wonderful things, by the way. But there was a young man who was on that path and was actually working in a lab and for the first time really asking himself if I'm happy doing this. I'm certainly capable of doing it, but his love actually is in music. And, of course, the struggle of what kind of life can you build with culturally seen impractical major versus one that you're smart, you should be capitalizing on it. And so those kind of questions I would call them the timeless, the big questions. Who are you? What do you want to do with your life? Where do you want to kind of invest your energies and your time? And this is the absolute perfect window and development to do that. I'm not saying that you can't come around to these questions at any stage, because, in fact, I don't think the question of what do I want to do with my life ever goes away. But at this point, you can be an English major today, a history major tomorrow, an engineering major next semester, and just keep – and nobody thinks that's odd or weird.
Except maybe your parents.
Absolutely, the parents might. Absolutely, the parents might. But I think ultimately what the parents want is for their children to be happy. And – it would be a shame to have a place like this with such opportunity for self-discovery and not capitalize on it.
Now, clearly, you are a man who's passionate about what you do. Can you tell us a little bit about the path that you took to get here?
Well, I think in a lot of ways that's informed what I do now. I'll try to keep it brief, but the truth is I am the last person you'd ever expect to be putting any voice to higher education. I wasn't going to college. I was playing in a band. Coming out of high school, we thought we were probably much better than we really were. But we were playing, and I know my friends were leaving, and I didn't even look at a college. Two weeks before the start of a fall semester, my father walked into my bedroom and asked me to take a 16-week experiment. That's how he phrased it. It was college. And if I didn't like it, I could come back. But I think he recognized that if I didn't take advantage of the opportunity then, that at different stages of my life, it would be much harder, and I might regret it. He wanted me to at least cross it off my list. To understand kind of the magnitude of that, you'd need to know just a little bit about my father, a small Iowa kid. My grandmother had an eighth-grade education. My grandfather eked out a high school degree, and for reasons that to this day I don't even totally understand, my father packed everything he owned in a duffel bag, kissed his mother on the cheek, and hitchhiked to a foreign country called college. Met my mother there, took the first job he was offered, stayed there for 40 years, which is the father I knew. But along the way, I watched him get a master's degree, and at the age of 10, I stood there and watched my father get his PhD from Northwestern, and I knew it wasn't for any promotion. It wasn't anything tangible in that way. It was because learning was so important. And it was kind of a bedrock in my family. And I had no intention of going past that initial fall semester. But I went because of the deep respect I had for my father. It was kind of, in many ways, what he stood for. Along the way, I have to be honest, I began to question, take a look and say, I recognized the opportunity I had, and I wondered, what would it be like if I kind of took this opportunity, step outside the world for a little bit and discover what I really wanted to do and how I might get there. And that's what led me. But yeah, the thought that I'm talking with you and I spent my whole adult life on a college campus, you know, really baffles me.
So with young people in college today, it feels like in some ways the stakes are a lot higher because there was a time when you could work during your breaks and pay for your tuition and really, you know, finish college with an even balance sheet and look to the future. Plus the fact that having a college degree made you really hireable in a lot of different fields, even if it wasn't the field you studied. Right now, when young people go to college, they rack up a lot of debt. There is a lot of pressure on them to have that degree pay off right when they graduate. Does that change this dynamic?
It does change the dynamic, and I'm absolutely sensitive to that. When my father graduated from college with his degree, it didn't matter what it was in. And if he didn't like the job he was in, he could change it. He could find another one. He was incredibly marketable. I could work when I went to college. I could work in a summer with a summer job I could get and pay for my entire year. And there's also an arms race going on where students are, it's not enough just to have a good GPA and have a good college degree, but you need to have organizations and the right volunteer experiences and all these kind of things to compete on the other side. And quite honestly, now an undergraduate degree might not even be enough, right? You need to get a graduate degree to really have the type of marketability. And the statistics, it's a 50-50 coin toss is what they're telling us, that when you graduate with your undergraduate degree, that you even get a job that requires a college degree. So it is so difficult for students today. Many of my colleagues, you know, quietly in back rooms will say that we're creating a generation of indentured servants. So I am entirely sensitive to that. But at the same time, I think there's an extrinsic argument for following your passion, because what it also is going to take in the world that we're entering is interdisciplinary individuals, remarkable individuals, and I think becoming remarkable comes from obviously spending time, from caring deeply about what you're doing, and that's so much easier and comes so much quicker for those that are able to invest in the things that they care about and the things that they believe that they uniquely offer the world. So You know, while I absolutely get that, I don't think that changes my notion about trying to hothouse yourself and throw a dart at a moving job target that you think is where the job possibilities are going to be.
Now, of course, there's a time-honored tradition of an older generation bashing younger generations, and right now millennials are getting bashed all the time. But, you know, something that you hear is young people just don't have the kind of work ethic that my generation had or the generation before me had. And, you know, they're going to have jobs. There is something to be said for, okay, I may not be doing a job that is something I'm passionate about, but I need to take pride in what I'm doing and work as hard as I can and take, you know, a lot of satisfaction in the fact that I'm doing this job well. Millennial bashers would say, you know, they say because it's not a job that I feel passionate about, I don't care.
Well, when I first started this work about a decade ago, my colleagues told me it was doomed for failure. They said that learning for learning's sake, exact words, learning for learning's sake was third or fourth on my students' priority list. And I'll be honest, I you know, my ego is small enough that that if I failed, I was okay with that. But when I started bringing people into my classroom and started opening it up and started, you know, having some visibility, I was nervous about that notion. And I can tell you that what my students want, what I believe all students want, is to be inspired. And I don't believe that they are at the degree they could be in our institutions. And what I can also give you some comfort in is that, again, it's anecdotal, these are the students, but I have hundreds and hundreds of students every year. They deeply want to make a meaningful difference. I think it's a reaction. I'm in my 50s. I think it's a reaction to my generation. They look at their parents who go to jobs that are soulless, that pay the bills and take care of what they need, but really that really just are really not inspiring them at all. They're soulless positions, and they are crawling their way to some retirement age. And these students want nothing to do with that.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about finding and following your passion. With me is Dave Gould. He's the administrator for the Bell and Blank Center for Gifted Education and Talent Development at the University of Iowa. He also is on faculty in the Honors Program at the U of I. We'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call for you to share your story. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about finding and following your passion. And we want to hear your stories this hour. Did you follow your passion into a career? Have you changed careers because you needed to be doing something you felt more passionate about? Or maybe you think that this is terrible advice. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Dave Gould of the University of Iowa. He has helped many students find their passion, find direction in their lives and careers. He's administrator for the Bell and Blank Center for Gifted Education and Talent Development at the University of Iowa. And I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now, Andrew Anderson of Muscatine. He spent a lot of years searching for a career that could harness his passion, and he finally found it. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Charity and David.
Hello, Andrew.
Thank you so much for being here today, Andrew. And give us a little bit of background. You were one of those students that picked a practical career path, right?
That's right. I went to university first for engineering, and I thought the work was going pretty well. But I did reach a point where I felt I knew I had to make a change. I needed to work with people in a different way. But I had no idea where that would go or what that would be. So I ended up leaving the program, and it's been a lot of years, finding the next things with that.
Well, and you and I have talked on this program in the past about your involvement with an artistic community and creative corridor in Muscatine. And so you've put a lot of your passion, a lot of your interests into extracurricular activities, but you found that wasn't enough for you?
Well, I guess what happened for me is I've always done creative work, and I love that kind of work. But I've tried a lot of things and found like they weren't enough. There was more to it. And so for me, I started being really conscious of what are the things that make me satisfied. So at the end of the day, I would think, was this a good day and why was it? Or if I got home and thought, like, wow, this is an amazing day. I'm full of energy. I love it. And so I started identifying some things that really seemed like elements that were important for me to be satisfied with my day.
And you now are working as a realtor with a rule and rule in Muscatine. And probably when some people hear that, they're going to think, what? That's how he found his passion? So tell me about the path that you took to real estate.
Someone just said that the other day, like, oh, real estate. That's hard to imagine someone being really passionate about. And so I guess as I was thinking about it then, it makes sense when I realized, like, it lines up with the things that the interests that I have and the skill sets that I have. So some of the things I identified, like when I got home at the end of the day, when I had an awesome day, I realized I spent a lot of time with people, just talking with people, hearing what they were about. And I also had never seemed to be satisfied unless I'm self-employed and self-directed. So those were elements that I knew I needed. And then I also noticed that just when I had free time, I would drive around for hours and look at properties and trying to figure out what they're worth and imagine what they could be. And another interest was placemaking. You talked recently about like walkability and bikeability. Those things are really things I get very excited about those, and I feel they're very important. And so when you add all those things up, because I was really clear on those, when a real estate opportunity came along, I could see like, oh, yeah, there's real potential here.
So now that you have made the change, how does that change your life on a day-to-day basis? How does it change how you feel?
I literally almost every week there's a day, it's usually when I'm driving, where I'll just kind of burst out laughing. And it's because I can't believe I get to do something that I like so much. It works really well with my skill set, and I get to help a lot of people, and it keeps me close to the interests and things that I have. I love the public art and community development projects. And now I have a role where that's not just something I get to add to it. That really helps me be more successful in my work. So when those kinds of things add together, anyway, that's where it came together for me. And it's hard to believe I get to do this. And that's probably a really good sign you're in the right role.
Does it change how you feel about yourself?
Yeah. And I should say that it definitely does, but it's been a really long process. So the last 3 years, I would say, is when things have largely come together on that. But it's been about 8 years where I've been knowing I wanted to get a better role and have tried a lot of things. And I won't say they didn't work. It was clear that wasn't all. So, in the last 3 years, it's amazing. I feel so much more in my element, and to be able to use the skill set that I have to help people it changes everything. And it's really worth like paying attention to it, or it has been for me.
Andrew, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Andrew Anderson of Muscatine. He's now a realtor with Rule and Rule in Muscatine. And Dave Gould, I saw you nodding your head. I mean, listening to Andrew's story, does that strike a lot of chords with you and what you've seen people go through?
Well, it's a beautiful story. And what we know, and this isn't my opinion, this is actually research-driven. This is Martin Seligman at University of Pennsylvania and Dan Lerner at NYU and Christopher Peterson, who was at University of Michigan, is that when people find what they get lost in, what they love, what they uniquely believe that they have to offer the world, they're happier. But the deepest, richest life is when you're able to take that and turn it towards something larger than yourself, able to contribute to a larger world. And you know, that's what I heard in his story, the connection with others, the skill set, the things that kind of line up, the things that we uniquely, this all kind of fits me. And that's different for everybody, right? And sometimes it might even be different at different stages of your life. But that's a beautiful story.
I want to talk about money for a minute. Earlier, you were talking about a student who'd been pursuing a course in engineering. He loves music, and that may not be a very practical choice in a lot of ways. I mean, for a lot of people to choose to do what they're passionate about, to follow their passions, they may have to make some not very practical financial decisions. How does that play into what you see as people finding their meaning and finding happiness?
Well, let me just start out by being very frank. Money matters. Money matters. If you are going to bed at night and you're worried that somebody is going to repossess your car while you're sleeping, if you're concerned that that your money, will it make it to the end of the month? Can I take care of my kids? Can I continue to live in this home? Those type of real concerns. It absolutely is a horrible place to live, and the conversation we're having is extremely insensitive, because how do you sit there and kind of ponder what I want to do with my life when you're just trying to get by day to day? And I absolutely believe, I mean, that's a whole other set of questions, but I absolutely believe that that's something we need to be very concerned about. And quite honestly, my generation needs to be very thoughtful about how we are helping our young people transition out of college and into the world, and the opportunities we give them, and the opportunities we have to kind of lay their lives. You have to take care of yourself. You have to have a livelihood. But, you know, once that's in place, I think that the notion of spending 30 or 40 years of your life in a cubicle, trying to squeeze the things that really make you come alive into the evenings and weekends are really a, that's kind of to me a sad state, regardless of what your bank account looks like. We need to be practical. I have made lots of decisions along the way, and I know many of the people who choose things that kind of follow their heart do as well, that I live, it's kind of small house, big life. You know, I have not been able to purchase and travel and expend in certain ways that I would if I had a larger bank account. But I think the trade-off is this rich adventure of really kind of actualizing the life you want to live. And when I ask people, would they trade it? It's almost unanimously, no, absolutely not.
Now, you and I are both people who followed our passions into careers and have made financial decisions that maybe weren't the most practical. But we're also at a level where we can do that. That's a luxury that we have. So when we talk about this question, is this just a question of privilege? You know, if you are socioeconomically comfortable enough, you can ask this question of what is my passion? And if you don't have the means to necessarily put food on the table every day, this question is not for you?
I certainly hope not. But having said that, even you and I, Charity, we got here not on our own. We got here by lots of individuals who helped us, by mentoring us, by opening doors and believing in us. And I think that those that are even more vulnerable, that came from different places, I think just require more of that. And we need to be sensitive to, I mean, we want to see everyone. We can look at it in a personal way. I mean, when you and I are old, this is the people that are going to be leading our world, right? But also just in a human level, we need to give back. We need to reach farther. There's a group in New York called the Future Project that works in some of the most vulnerable schools. And what they have found is the thing that you have to do with the individuals that don't even see this as possibilities is give them hope, help them believe there's a future, and then build them a path to get there.
Let's get to the phones. I know a lot of people want to join in on this conversation. We're talking about finding and following your passion this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Kelly is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
Hi. And your experience that you want to share plays a lot into this question of money being a major influence. Tell us your story.
My husband actually graduated from UNI back in 2006. He went and got his teaching degree. He was a PE teacher, and he taught for 6 years, and he loved it. It was definitely, I would say, a passion of his. However, knowing that he needed to get out of the small town he was in, he needed to try something different. And being a PE teacher, he didn't have a whole lot of options when it comes to moving around. So he decided to chase after his sports dream. And if you know my husband, if he's not talking about sports or reading about sports, he's dreaming about them. So he wanted to try his hand at sports management, and he ended up getting his master's online and had to do an internship, which took him to Rochester, New York, and he was actually a the business operations front desk manager there. For his internship, and he absolutely loved it. However, knowing that eventually we would bring our family back to Des Moines. At the beginning, I was very against the sports management, just knowing that here in Des Moines, there's not a lot of options for us to really find a job and be able to support a family on my job as a home health nurse and his job as doing his sports degree. And unfortunately, that did come to fruition. He did not end up getting finding a job. And he then ended up going to becoming kind of a credit manager / account manager for a different company. So he spent all that time and all that energy trying to pursue a passion that he really is completely passionate about. Unfortunately, there's just not a lot of opportunities in that area, and there's thousands and millions of kids who figure it out a little bit sooner than he did that that's what they want to do. So that's kind of where we're sitting now.
That sounds frustrating, Kelly. Dave, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, for starters. And secondly, I also want to be clear that I don't believe everybody has a fairy tale ending. There are people that spend their lives chasing things that that they care deeply about, and even when they're very talented, even when they're very good at it, sometimes it eludes them, and that's difficult. I guess the question I would have is you know, would you spend a life never trying to chase it? You need to pay your bills. You need to be rational. You need to be able to look at opportunities. You need to sometimes take the same interests and flex those muscles in different ways. You know, not every, let's say, artist has to be someone who has got their paintings hanging in a gallery, and that's not the only way that they can take those creative muscles and flex them in ways where a paycheck is easier. I mean, I started out as a double major in art and music. I came in and did, I was going to get my MFA and ended up in cultural studies. I was a documentary filmmaker for a while, and I'm an educator. If you looked at that, it seems like a whirling circle all over the place, but I absolutely can see that the same kind of central things that I cared about when I was 18 years old are the same things I care about in my 50s.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I can, with Kelly and her husband's really frustrating path, I also can see parents looking at their children and thinking, oh, my gosh, I don't want you to follow that path and find yourself in an area where you're very qualified but unemployable.
And that's a really good point. So here's the thing, is I started a course in fall of 2010 that really was looking at the university as a laboratory for students to find their passions. And I realized very quickly, a year or so later, as the students then would come back into my office, sit in the very same seats that they were before, telling me, oh, I love this. I'm now, you know, I'm now got a major and a mentor, and I dance with Kids for Cancer, and I DJ on the radio station, and all these wonderful things. And then they would slowly tell me that in a couple of weeks they would graduate and ask for the next playbook. I realized that I was missing a piece. And the piece is figuring out how that passion plugs into the world, how it adds value. Because quite honestly, if you have a passion, you can actually take it all the way and get a PhD in it and be really developed, but you've never figured out how to engage it, how it serves others, then you might be very talented, but you still have a really a hobby. And I think the important thing is not just to have our young people, or for that matter anyone, find what they're passionate about, but really develop it, work really hard, persevere, and understand how it serves others. May not make you rich, but if you figure out how it adds value to someone else, how it adds value to the larger world, then I do believe there's a place and an economic exchange that can come from that.
The other thing that I was thinking about with Kelly's story is, as we get older, there are so many other elements in our lives. I mean, when you're 19 years old and you're single and you have money is really the only barrier, you have a lot of freedom. But when you're an adult and you have adult responsibilities, this can be an incredibly dangerous thing to do.
Which is why it's so important at the age in the 20-somethings. It's a window of development unlike any other. I use this little analogy that I borrow that let's say you and I are taking off in an airplane from LaGuardia, all right, New York, and we think we want to go to San Diego. And we get up there a little bit, we say, no, I didn't mean San Diego, I meant Seattle. You know, what is that, Charity? It's this, a little tweak on the steering column, and we're off to Seattle. But when you are circling San Diego and you say, I'm in the wrong place, I don't want to be here, I'm not saying I can't get off and can't reroute, it's so much harder.
We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest is Dave Gould. He's the administrator for the Bell and Blank Center at the University of Iowa and a member of the faculty in the Honors Program also at the U of I. And you can join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about finding and following your passion. My guest this hour is Dave Gould, who has helped many students find direction in their lives and careers. He's the administrator for the Bell and Blank Center for Gifted Education and Talent Development at the University of Iowa. He also taught a course this semester with the University of Iowa Honors Program called The Green Room, where students had an opportunity to ask some big questions about life and the future. He also teaches a life design course that gives students the same kind of opportunity to do that. And I want to ask you, in the past, you were talking about bringing members of the community into your classroom this semester. And in the past, in your life design course, you've also brought in senior citizens into the class. You've made many opportunities for intergenerational conversations. And of course, we learn a lot throughout life. So what do you feel a lifetime of experience can bring to this conversation that can really help students?
Well, for starters, the question that we're asking, the kind of that big question of what I want to do with my life, while it has a big eruption in the 20s, lots of change. You've gone through this period of school as long as you can remember, and all of a sudden you're tossed, if you will, into the real world. That question of what I want to do with my life never goes away. It could be a job change in your 30, a career change in your 40. It could be how do I retire with meaning in my 60s. And so when you're able to kind of diversify the conversation, I think it only enriches it. I love to experiment with my courses and see how I can push them on the edge a little bit and put things into them that I don't really 100% know how the outcome is going to be. It makes the class exciting. And I asked the associate provost at the university for 30 to 40 seats that I could have for free. And we gave them to the to members of the senior center with only two requirements, that they would come and that they cared about engaging with 20-somethings, that was important to them to have an intergenerational experience. And I can tell you it totally changes the dynamic of the classroom because not only from perspective, but my gosh, these seniors would just – I mean, I started by raising their hand asking questions, but then they would just be – they would just – whatever there was something they had to say, they would just engage it in a way that made the whole classroom discussion rich and wonderful. My line was last fall when we did this that my class was from 18 to 90 years old, and I used to go down to the communication studies building as I would watch these seniors come with walkers and canes to a classroom and actually not just be paraded across and tell us what it's like to be old, but actually as students and actually as participants. It was a beautiful thing.
Let's get back to the phones. Diane is on the line in Davenport. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Good morning.
Yeah, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I want to agree with Mr. Gould in almost everything he said, but I want to emphasize the need for a community involvement. My husband and I started a creative arts academy in Davenport, and we service 6th, 7th, and 8th graders with the long-range view of being through 12th grade. The kids audition in a certain arts area, but we feel strongly that they need to experience all of the arts, especially since the curriculum in Iowa does not involve dance in any form, really, and theater only in the high school. But we bring in community artists, and by community, I mean long range, not just the Quad Cities. So the kids get to talk to real-life artists, and they need to understand that it's not the narrow view of the arts that, frankly, most of their parents experienced in school. So So your parents might think art is someone in a garret starving but painting to their heart's content. We open up that it's film, animation, gaming design, all kinds of opportunities. And because they're talking to real people and experiencing what those careers would look like, a sixth grader is experiencing this. And it gives them a little basis to later on make a decision about what they want to do.
Diane, thank you so much for sharing that. And Dave, I'd love to hear your thoughts, because in recent years we have focused so much on STEM education as kids grow up. And of course, that is incredibly important. And if a kid gets excited about science, that's a great thing. But do you feel like this focus has maybe narrowed the worldview of students to the degree that it's hard for them to see what the possibilities are?
Well, I come from the arts and humanities, and so the answer is I see them as incredibly valuable too. They help us to define what it means to be human. It helps to articulate, helps to give the world meaning. But you need both. Arts come very natural to me, and I love them, promote them, and have lived them. But I honestly believe if I was a biology teacher, if I was a chemistry teacher, that sense of wonder, that sense of beauty would be the way I would teach those subjects as well.
Let's go to Nick on the line in Ames. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hi. What are your thoughts?
So I'm pretty ambivalent about this conversation. I certainly appreciate the contribution that one's occupation can have to one's meaning and purpose. But I think, like you mentioned earlier, it takes an incredible amount of privilege to have the horizontal mobility to do some of these things. And even throughout the generations, like maybe only the past 50 years have people been talking about this. And so my question is, were people less happy back then when this wasn't even a possibility? And how do we talk to people now who are hearing this conversation, agreeing, yeah, I want to be passionate about my occupation, but really just don't have the possibility of doing that? I think really we can do a disservice to those people when, you know, implanting and inundating them with these hopes that aren't possible. And I think we need to return to, you know, what does make a person happy, you know, and how can you find purpose that's not in your occupation? Because for most of history, people have not had choices of occupation. They've done what their parents did, or they had gotten an apprenticeship, and there's no choice. And so are we suggesting that those people couldn't be happy or didn't have meaning or didn't have purpose? And so I just wonder what your guest thoughts are on that, and how do we stay away from actually doing a disservice to probably a majority of America and certainly a majority of the world.
All right, Nick, thanks a lot. So Nick is someone who feels like this is advice that leads people astray. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. My grandparents were farmers. Their parents were farmers. Do I think my grandparents were happy? Yes, I do. And I think there's a lot of research on what makes us happy, and connection to others, community engagement. Those kinds of things were very much a part of my grandparents' life and, family relationships. Those made them very happy. I guess I resist the idea that because the world isn't a fairy tale and that we can't all have this happy ending, I think success and happiness, I mean, it isn't measured by, you know, for example, I'm going to be the general manager of the Chicago Bulls, or that I'm going to have a one-man exhibit at the Contemporary Art Museum in Chicago. I can find some wonderful ways to contribute to the world in ways that put my voice to it that are much more low profile. And I think that, the idea, you know, he mentioned the idea about asking these eternal questions isn't a modern day thing. This goes back to Plato and Socrates. You know, who am I? Why am I here? There is absolutely a piece to that you need to have the opportunity to reflect. You need to have the ability in your life and the room to be able to think and reflect on what it is. And I totally get that, and I believe we should care about those that are more vulnerable. But again, this is not necessarily passion. Passion may be an overused word today. It may be something that's kind of become trite and superficial. But the notion of really questioning the world, Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, described this, the search for meaning as the engine that that runs and describes all of us, right? And so it's not a it's not a new idea by any stretch.
Well, and I want to return to something you were saying earlier about how you have students who go through your life design class and they sort of do catch on fire and they get involved in all of these things that they care so deeply about. Mm-hmm. And then they come back to you and say, but hey, what do I do now? There has to be some value in getting excited about things and asking these big questions and trying to figure out what you do care about, even if it doesn't translate into a job, right?
Exactly. So what we know statistically is about 20% of the undergraduates who come to a college, only 20% know what they're passionate about. The other 80% have no clue. And it's much like I kind of attribute it to like dating. You know, some people, they lock eyes across a darkened room and fall in love just on sight. Okay, it didn't happen to me, but I'm assuming that could be true. But for the rest of us, it becomes this, it's like a series of dates. You know, you go on some that are nightmares. You go on some that are okay. You go on some a little better than average that you'll try again until you find something that you can't live without. And I think that regardless of just vocation, just jobs, being able to discover that in the world and put that into your life is invaluable.
We have this tweet from Sunny. My parents settled. They struggled, and their health suffered. I said I would never do that, but it took years to find a compromise of money versus happiness. So this is also a lifelong journey for a lot of people. And, we were talking earlier with Andrew, who shifted gears a few times before he found what he wanted. I also look at 18-year-olds, and I think, how could you know what you want? And I guess I knew when I was 18, but that just seems so rare and so fortunate if you are that person. So, I mean, do we have to leave room open for growth and for change in ourselves?
We need to leave room open for growth and change no matter what age we are. And I think the thing is that my fear is not that they have – number one, if somebody told me I know exactly what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, I would seriously doubt that. Only 20% of our undergraduates are doing anything remotely related to their major 10 years after graduation. So you see the vast change that happens. But, you know, I think the most important thing is that you begin to take steps to find it. You begin to take steps to search and see what it is. And I think that the alternative is to be paralyzed and to hope that someday it's going to knock on your door.
We have this from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. I'm 34, and I've done just about everything: retail, food service, custodial, telemarketing, phlebotomy, graphic design, and bricklaying. I'm finally satisfied with my position as an estimator. By doing all of those other jobs, I figured out what I did want and what I didn't want out of a job. So many people focus on what they do want, but I feel it's just as important to know, preferably from experience, about what they will not tolerate in their daily work life. And we've been talking about finding passion, although a lot of us have this much more practical day-to-day issue of, I need to go and do this job, and I need to be able to do it without hating life.
Right. And that's why I think to be able to start this journey early is always a lot easier. When you're in college, well, yes, you probably have student loans, but you're living in large groups in a room. You're eating ramen noodles. I mean, all those kind of analogies. And I think the ability to take those risks, to be able to – I mean, my son is in New York right now, and he doesn't live a glamorous life. But it has allowed him to work through jobs and to gradually take risks, calculated risks, still able to pay his rent, still able to take and be responsible for himself, but take risks in the direction that his heart calls him to be able to do the things that he thinks he loves.
From Julia, how does one weigh the benefits and risks of taking the leap from a safe but possibly less fulfilling job into a passion career? And haven't people always pursued their passions as hobbies or weekend endeavors and made it fit into their lives? As much as my husband is supportive of everything I do in the arts in my community, I must be responsible to my family's needs first and my passions second. And what about the people who may be passionate about something, but quite frankly, they aren't good enough at it to pursue it for a lifetime?
Well, there's a lot in there, but yeah. but for starters, we have to be responsible, right? So just because you are searching for something, just because you're on a journey, doesn't mean that you are excused from having to take care of yourself and take care of those of those that you're responsible for. So I think that they're two separate things, but the difference is allowing my life to have sitting in a cubicle and saying, this is it, that this is where I land, and you know, this is what my life is meant to be, and I've given up the search. I think that the notion of me still searching, the notion of me still on an adventure, the notion of me still writing the novel of my life, I think still is adding value.
But for people who, you know, are looking for that work-life balance, I mean, so much of my life does not happen in the office. So much of what is incredibly important and that I'm passionate about in my life doesn't happen between the hours of, you know, 8 and 4 every day. But that's something to think about as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the things is when we're talking education, I think how to be good citizens, how to be contributing members of society, which isn't necessarily something you're getting a paycheck for, are things that education and discovering who you are can contribute. You know, you can be fulfilled in lots of ways, and it is a balancing act. If you look at your life like a portfolio, you know, I may not have the absolute perfect job, but it serves this purpose. It pays for these things, and then it allows me to do these other things, and that's okay too. I mean, it isn't that everyone's going to find the magic Cinderella slipper and become, you know, this magical job. Sometimes it's a portfolio of what your life looks like.
And we don't have time to go back to the phones, but Peter in West Des Moines wanted to bring up the question of fear, that's something that stops a lot of people from following their passions and their dreams because they're scared of failing or scared of hearing the word no. Is that something you tackle with your students too?
Absolutely. And I tell my students, this is the best time to fail. I want them to fail. I mean, it's a strange thing because we're grading them, and especially when you're dealing with honor students, failure is something that they are adverse to. But I call it noble failure. There's a difference. The type of failure I'm talking is not because you're lazy or you're apathetic. It's a kind of failure that comes from taking risks. It's a kind of a calculated risk, smart risks. And it's also the type of failure that you learn from. Failure, to me, is the raw material for success. I mean, one of your callers mentioned the idea that she learned what she loved to do because she went through these series of things and was able to evaluate them, right? And if you don't ever do that, then you're making no forward progress. The growth opportunities, if you will.
Dave Gould, thank you so much for being here today.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Dave Gould is the administrator for the Bell and Blank Center for Gifted Education and Talent Development at the University of Iowa. He's also on the honors faculty and teaches a program just this semester, a new one called The Green Room, where he gave students an opportunity to explore some of the big questions in life. He also teaches a life design course that gives students that opportunity as well. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Claire Roth, Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. We had production assistance today from Divine Huff. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.